Chapter 23. As she entered the salon, she heard the faint sighing of relief of those already there. She smiled darkly. People who wanted to eat in the Imperial Salon had to wait till she broke bread or sent word she wasn't coming. No compulsion existed for anyone to be present, but usually those who had access did not deny themselves the privilege. An elder said, "Good morning," then sat down at the head of her table. She sipped a glass of water, which was the signal for the waiters to come in. After she had given her order, she looked around the room. Everywhere were graying heads, men and women over 50, relics of the Regency. A half dozen young men and two of her younger secretaries sat at her own table, but they were a remnant, the residue of the emigration of young people that had followed the departure of Prince Del Curtain.
"Did everybody have a nice sleep last night?"
Inelda broke the silence sweetly. They hastened to assure her that they had.
"How nice,"
she murmured, and settled into a moody silence. She wasn't sure just what she wanted of her companions. Lightness, perhaps. But how much? A year before, a newly introduced young man had asked her if she were still a virgin. And since she was, the incident still annoyed her. Crudeness was definitely out of order. She had an instinctive feeling that immorality on her part would reflect on the reputation of the Isher family. But then what? She pecked at a piece of toast. What did she want? A positive approach. A belief in principles with an ability to see the humorous side of life. Her own upbringing, severe and simple, had stressed the positive mind trainings. Very important, but seriousness could be overdone. She stiffened with an old determination.
"I've got to get rid of these humorless do-nothing, let's be careful and not rock the boat, think twice and stop."
She paused self-pityingly and prayed to her private gods.
"Give me one good joke a day to make me laugh, and one man who can handle affairs of state, and in addition know how to amuse me. If only Del were here."
She scowled in annoyance at the direction her thoughts were taking. Her cousin, Prince Del Curtain, disapproved of the attack on the weapon shops. What a shock when she had first discovered that. And what mortification when all the young men of his clique left the palace with him, refusing to participate in the adventure. Having killed Banton Vickers for threatening to inform the weapon shops of her plans, a treasonous utterance that would have destroyed her prestige if she had let it pass, she could not overlook the opposition. Tight-lipped, she recalled their final conversation. The prince, cold and formal, marvelously good-looking in his anger, herself uncertain but determined as he said, "When you get over this madness, Inelda, you may call me back." He must have known that it was an opportunity for her to say, "That will be never," but she hadn't dared to say it. She had been like a wife, she thought bitterly, wronged but unwilling to say too much, for fear that her husband might take her at her word. Not that she could ever marry the prince after such an action on his part. Still, it would be nice to have him back, later, after the weapon shops were destroyed. She finished breakfast and glanced at her watch. 9:30. She cringed involuntarily. The long day was barely begun. At 10:30, free of urgent correspondence, she had the officer deserter brought in. He was a man of 33, according to his file, country-born and holding the rank of major. He came in, a faint cynical smile on his lips, but his eyes looked depressed. His name was Giles Sanders. Inelda studied him gloomily. According to his file, he had three mistresses and had made a fortune out of a peculiar graft involving army purchases. It was a fairly typical case history, and the part that was difficult to understand was why he, who had so much, had given it all up. She asked the question earnestly.
"And please," she said, "do not insult me by suggesting that you were concerned with the moral issue of the war. Tell me simply and plainly why you gave up all your possessions for dishonor and disgrace. In one act, you disinherited yourself. The very least that can happen to you is that you'll be sent to Mars or Venus permanently. Were you a fool or a coward or both?"
He shrugged. "I suppose I was a fool." His feet fumbled nervously over the floor. His eyes did not evade her direct stare, but his answer left her dissatisfied. After 10 minutes, she had got no real explanation out of him. It was possible that the profit and loss motivation had not influenced his decision. She tried a new approach.
"According to your file," she said, "you were notified to report to Building 800A, and because of your rank, it was explained to you that at last a method had been found to destroy the weapon shops. An hour later, after having burned your private papers, you left your office and took up residence in a seaside cottage, which you had purchased secretly, you thought, 5 years ago. A week later, when it was clear that you did not intend to do your duty, you were arrested. You have been in close confinement ever since. Is that picture fairly correct?
The man nodded, but said nothing. The Empress studied him, biting her lips.
My friend, she said softly at last, I have it in my power to make your punishment anything I desire, anything. Death, banishment, commutation,
she hesitated,
reinstatement.
Major Sanders sighed wearily. I know, he said. That was the picture I suddenly saw.
I don't understand.
She was puzzled.
If you realize the potentialities of your act, then you were very foolish.
The picture, he said in a monotone, as if he had not heard her interruption, of a time when someone, not necessarily yourself, would have that power without qualification, without there being anywhere to turn, without alleviation, without hope. She had her answer.
Well, of all the stupidity, said Inelda explosively.
She leaned back in her chair, momentarily overcome, drew a deep breath, then shook her head in irritation.
Major, she said gently, I feel sorry for you. Surely your knowledge of the history of my family must have told you that the danger of misuse of power does not exist. The world is too big. As an individual, I can interfere in the affairs of such a tiny proportion of the human race that it is ridiculous. Every decree that I issue vanishes into a positive blur of conflicting interpretations as it recedes from me. That decree could be ultimately mild. It would make no difference in the final administration of it. Anything, when applied to 11 billion people, takes on a meaningless quality that is impossible to imagine, unless you have studied, as I have, actual results.
She saw with astonishment that her words had not touched him. She drew back, offended. It was all so crystal clear, and here was one more obstinate fool. She restrained her anger with an effort.
Major, she said, with the weapon shops out of the way, we could introduce steadying laws that could not be flouted. There would be more uniform administration of justice, because people would have to accept the judgment of the courts, their only recourse being appeals to the higher courts.
Exactly, said Sanders. That was all. His tone rejected her logic. She studied him for a long moment, all the sympathy gone from her. Then she said bitterly,
If you're such a firm believer in the weapon shops, why didn't you protect yourself by going to them for a defensive gun?
I did. She hesitated, then asked coldly,
What was the matter? Did your courage fail you when it came to the point of using it to defend yourself from arrest?
Watching him, she knew she shouldn't have said that. It left her open to a retort which she realized might be devastating. Her fear was justified. Sanders said, No, Your Majesty. I did exactly what some of the other, deserters did. I took off my uniform and went to a weapon shop intending to buy a gun, but the door wouldn't open. It appears that I am one of the few officers who believe that the Isher family is the more important of the two facets of Isher civilization. His eyes had been bright as he spoke. Now they grew depressed again. I am, he said, in exactly the position you want to put everybody into. I have no way to turn. I must accept your law, must accept secret declarations of war on an institution that is as much a part of Isher civilization as the House of Isher itself. Must accept death if you decree it, without a chance to defend myself in open battle. Your Majesty, he finished quietly, I respect and admire you. The officers who deserted are not scoundrels. They were merely confronted with a choice, and they chose not to participate in an attack on things as they are. I doubt if I could put it more honestly than that. She doubted it, too. Here was a man who would never understand the realistic necessity of what she was doing. After she dismissed him, she noted his name in her check file, commenting that she wanted to hear the verdict of his court-martial. The action of writing the words reminded her of her inability to remember the name of the man whom Colonel Medlin was to produce by morning.
She leafed the pages and found it immediately. Cale Clark, she said aloud. That's he.
She realized that it was now time to go to the Treasury Department and hear all the reasons why it was impossible to spend more money. With a tired smile, she went out of the study and took a private elevator up to the 50th floor.